Hi, everybody. Here we are on Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to get out of that box of conventional thinking and soar in the free thought zone, which, man, we really need to project into that space and be in that reality as things become more and more interesting on planet Earth. They certainly are in my personal life, and I'm sure for many of you. But tonight we're going to talk about the big picture. I have with me a truly esteemed colleague, Alfred Weber. He's I probably mispronounced that. I'm sure I did. Alfred Lebremont Weber. He's had me on his show a couple of times. He's been with us before, but it seems like each time I talk to Alfred, we just barely scratch the surface and the time is gone. So today we're going to be talking about some very interesting aspects of his work. His website is exopolitics.com. He is about everything that is outside the box. And I welcome him. Hi, Alfred. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You know, your qualifications are so vast and expansive that I don't even know how to introduce you anymore. So tell us a little bit about your qualifications and your focus as the director of Exopolitics, as a journalist, a lawyer, a broadcaster, in a nutshell, if you could possibly manage it.
Okay, I'm not quite sure how to interpret the word nutshell. That's a loaded term in our field.
Pardon the pun.
Well, basically, just to cut to the chase, 11 years ago, I wrote a book called Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Multiverse. And that book introduced the whole science of exopolitics, which is a social science. And it's the science of relations among intelligent civilizations in the multiverse. And we earthling humans are a third dimension solar system civilization in a multidimensional multiverse full of hyperdimensional civilizations, intelligent civilizations, governance bodies like galactic governance bodies. And we're also in a multiverse that has a whole, what we would call spiritual dimension to it, which is inhabited by the intelligent civilization of souls, a whole array of spiritual beings, and what we could call God or Source. Now, the interesting thing about that is that God or Source is actually the spiritual dimension. It's the sum total of the intelligent civilization of souls, spiritual beings, and Source itself. So we're actually also, all of us who are souls that are now taking on experiences in this created kind of matrix reality that we call the universes, we're also Source. So it's this things that the spiritual realities, spiritual traditions, the sacred traditions, the religions have always said is true, science is now finding to be true. And that's where the journey of exopolitics had led me over the last 10 years. And my next book is coming out early next year. It's called Dimensions, The Ecology of the Multiverse. And I've just sort of described the dimensional ecology of the multiverse. So that's what I've been busy doing over the last 10 years.
Yeah. Besides everything else you're doing, which is vast and far-reaching. I wanted you to have you on particularly to talk. You are such a whistleblower when it comes to so many of the covert things that are going on with regards to Mars. And with regards to the developments in time travel and so much of the information that's leaking now, and I was particularly interested in having you update us. People that listen to my show know that I'm very intrigued by the truth embargo regarding Mars. And, well, I'm actually intrigued about Mars and irritated about the embargo, but I would love for you to give us some insights into what is being exposed at this time in your circles regarding the unfolding of life on Mars.
Okay, well, first, that's a very interesting question, because Earth and Mars are two small planets in a small solar system. However, it turns out that we have kind of universe-wide, or at least galaxy-wide, impact. And so what I'd like to do is kind of give a larger framework as to where, exopolitically speaking, things stand on Earth and Mars now, as far as we know. And then kind of back up into what we know about life on Mars vis-a-vis life on Earth and on the moon, on our moon and Mars's moons for that matter.
Great.
It helps to understand that the solar system for a long time has really been an interplanetary society, and Earth and Mars are really now an interplanetary society. They were overtly an interplanetary society prior to a solar system catastrophe that occurred around 11,500 years ago, when a fragment of the Vela supernova entered the solar system and destroyed the ecology, the surface ecology of Mars, made it an oblong, cracked planet, and also destroyed our great maritime civilization, which Plato called Atlantis, which was based on the, quote, pharaonic pyramidal civilizations. Now, to back into the larger universal picture now, we have just published, and people can go to exopolitics.com for this update, an interview and the first of a series of articles with the earthly representative of a Galactic Governance Council, specifically the Andromeda Council. And to make a long story short, the Andromeda Council, they consist of a whole number of star systems and even some galaxies. The Galactic Federation of the Milky Way Galaxy has a seat on the Andromeda Council, and the Galactic Federation in this galaxy currently has about 139 star systems on it. They had made a study in the near past, probably about 10 years ago was when all this came to fruition, around the 9/11 event, I would guess. And they had, of course, these advanced civilizations are outside of the third dimension. We're in the third dimension of time-space. So these other civilizations are in the fourth, fifth, sixth. And so they have access to the third dimension in different ways. They're not constrained by time. So they had been monitoring and had gone forward in time about 350 plus years and had traced a great tyranny which would arise around 350 years from now, and traced it back to Earth. Not only Earth, Mars, and our moon. And traced it back in present time to the attempted occupation of Earth and Mars and Mars and Earth's moon and Mars moon, Phobos, by a fourth dimensional faction of Orion Greys and Draco reptilians. And we know that the Greys first entered into treaties to allow them to abduct to abduct humans in return for some military technology with the Roosevelt administration in 1934, according to some whistleblowers, and a little later than that in the 30s with the Third Reich. And so both the U.S. and the Nazis were really kind of being fueled by the Greys at that point. But the larger purpose was an infiltration and takeover and occupation of planet Earth as resources for a takeover of the humans. And by 1964, another whistleblower reports that U.S. intelligence had concluded that the Greys and reptilians had timelined Earth for takeover sometime between the year 2000 and the year 2030. So we have a congruency between what U.S. intelligence had estimated and between what we're hearing from the Galactic Council through its human representative, whom we interviewed. And what the Galactic Council says is that they determined in the 2001-2002 framework, probably after 9/11, which was when the Greys and Reptilians made their mega move, to intervene. They set aside the law of non-intervention and intervene in a policing action to liberate planet Earth from Grey and Reptilian occupation. That war has taken up to the third quarter of 2011 that we're in now, and they have reported that the Grey and Reptilian occupation is over. For all practical purposes, there are no more Greys or reptilians in Earth presence. They have been sent through stargates to the far reaches of the universe. And there are only pockets of them in tunnels underneath cities like Washington, D.C. And they're in the process of mopping them up. So the implications of this are vast. It means that the New World Order, which was a front for the Grey reptilian agenda, it was how they were rolling it out on Earth through an Illuminati ruling class that had been taken over by the Grey reptilian agenda, either through mind control or clones, or, you know, they just became willing vessels of it, now has no backup. So they're on the verge of collapse. And not only that, the whole infrastructure that the ruling class had set up for Mars, Earth, and the Moon has now been liberated. So what would have been a tyranny out in 350-odd years from now has now been cut in the bud. And we are the beneficiaries because we've been liberated. Apparently, there are 21 other planets still that are under Grey reptilian domination, so the war continues in other sectors.
Well, let me just ask you, intervene here with a question, which is, first of all, I would like to say a big aho to that, but there will be people listening who are going to be asking themselves, well, this is all well and good, but when he speaks of whistleblowers and councils and the merging of spirit and science, where is he getting this information? So I wanted to, besides the information you've received from this channel, what is the current, let's say, the whistleblower source that you have, can any of these people be named, and why are they being allowed to reveal this information and not being sent to another planetary orb?
Okay. Well, I have summarized a lot in the last 10 minutes, and I wanted to get the big picture out and to say that, look, there's a lot of good news. And
definitely.
Not only that, I wanted to do it in a way to show that Earth, Moon, and Mars have a galactic universal connection. Mm-hmm. And that is that the takeover by the New World Order here on the planet, the attempted takeover here on Earth, Mars, and the Moon was being monitored by higher powers. And yeah. And that has now that was a real threat. So that threat is now over. And if I didn't say that, as I told the story of the secret bases on Mars, people would be apprehensive, because yeah. I would have to tell the story from the 1970s forward, and they wouldn't know that it has a happy ending. So I made an editorial decision when you asked me the question at the beginning of the program, should I go the full hour and only reveal the happy ending at the end, or should I reveal it at the beginning? And I said, you know something, I'm going to reveal it at the beginning and then go back and say, look, this is what we know going back to 1971 about life on Mars. But the excellent. Bigger picture is that the war's over.
This is a wonderful piece of news, and it also confirms what the Syrian High Council has given me with regard to non-interventionism, which has been, I think we've discussed it together, at the moment that the human race or the events on the planet Earth become a threat and a danger to the rest of your solar logos, then we are free to intervene. So this string of events has had everything to do with the radiation, the deliberate release of radiation on this planet, and coincides beautifully with what you're saying, which is very exciting, because people are really getting to the end of their tether, I would say. And we'll talk about that when you talk about the splitting of the two realities of the 2012 timeline, which I hope we'll get to before the end of the show.
Oh, wow. So we're going to really cover the full gamut.
Well, we, as usual, when I'm with you, Alfred, it just like boom, the time that we still have the illusion of flies, as they say. But yeah, if not, we'll just keep having you back until we manage to get it all.
Okay. Well, look then. There's this kind of a bifurcation of materials here. Yeah. I could go into the whole secret time-space program that where I can name all the whistleblowers.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, good. And I've been working over the last 10 years with a series of whistleblowers from the U.S. secret time-space program. And they started with Project Pegasus, which was a DARPA CIA project from 1968 to 72, which developed Tesla-based teleportation and time travel in the quantum hologram, the quantum time-space hologram that we live in, i.e., we live in a quantum hologram composed of timelines. As a dimension of time-space. And teleportation, Tesla-based teleportation, is a technology, and there are various devices, whereby you can go along the same timeline from point ABCD to point EFYD, i.e. you're in the same timeline D, but you're changing your spatial coordinates. In other words, I'm teleporting from here to Mars in the same timeline.
Okay.
Or I'm teleporting from Las Vegas to Australia from a CIA facility in Las Vegas to a CIA underground military base in Australia. And there are people that do that. We know from Command Master Sergeant Robert Dean that there are people that go to work every day via teleportation.
So you're talking about an actual device, that a mechanism or a technology that the CIA actually has, not a Stargate, right?
Yeah, no, they have artificial Stargates.
Okay.
I.e., Tesla-based teleportation is a device that electromagnetically opens up a vortal tunnel along a timeline in time-space and propels you forward. It doesn't break you down into particles like on Star Trek. It propels you forward from the point that you're at to the point you want to go. That's teleportation. If you're doing time travel where you would want to go from September 3rd, 2011 to September 3rd, 2045, then it would cross timelines and land you in that particular timeline.
I see.
Because what this device has discovered in the 40 years of science research is that we live in an artificial constructed matrix that was intelligently designed and constructed. That's what we live in. We live in an artificial matrix called third dimension time space. And that matrix was constructed by an intelligence, you know, and we can get into what intelligence constructed the universe and different universes, but that's what we live in. We live in a constructed virtual reality, and our deeper souls, which are based in the spiritual dimension, are having these virtual experiences inside of our bodies, inside the time-space matrix now.
Okay, wait, this is getting pretty heady. Run that by me one more time. So our spiritual, what you just said is extremely interesting. Could you repeat it, please?
Yeah, sure. Our deeper souls, which are located inside the spiritual dimension and are projecting themselves into this time-space matrix inside this time-space bodies that we inhabit, Patricia and Alfred, this is a virtual experience that we're having inside a created matrix known as the universe that we're in. And I'm just expressing, say, reincarnation theory, but we're expressing it now in terms of time science.
Mm-hmm. So are you speaking of the physical universe or of the multiverse when you're describing this hologram?
Okay. The physical universe that we inhabit is a hologram that's created by an intelligence. It's a time-space hologram that's created by an intelligence. Science knows that there's more than one universe in the multiverse. By the multiverse, we mean the collection of all created universes plus the spiritual dimension. The spiritual dimension includes the intelligent civilization of souls, the spiritual beings, and source. The multiverse is all that is.
Okay. Okay, great. I'm with you. So you were discussing that and relationship to the time travel secret plan or secret programs that are
So now we have specific whistleblowers like Michael Ralph, a U.S. serviceman who spent 20 years on the permanent security staff of the secret U.S. base on Mars from 1976 to 1996. And he was teleported to Mars in 1976, and he spent 20 years there as a part of the permanent security staff. And his wife, Stephanie Ralph, has written with him a two-volume book called The Mars Records that you can download as a PDF for free at exopolitics.com.
Wonderful.
that details his service there and details the many combats and battles that he had there with a fourth dimensional enemy, an invader.
And who is that? What species is that? Or when you say fourth dimensional invader, can you give us some details?
Well, I've had to construct that because Michael would not answer that directly, but the fourth dimensional invader appears to be the Orion Gray and Draco Reptilian Alliance. And the purpose of the Earth-Mars bases initially was to, one of their purposes was to create a common defense perimeter with the Earth and with the human civilization on Mars, which are the survivors of the 9500 BC solar system catastrophe, in order to defend ourselves against the invasion by the Orion Greys and the Draco Reptilians.
So does that then mean that Mars will also now be free of that that threat? Have they, or is it just Earth they're seeding? Or
No. Earth, the Moon, and Mars, they've been thrown out.
Okay, great news.
Yeah, and it's thrown out of the fourth dimension. You see, that was the kicker, because they had occupied certain strata of the fourth dimension, and that was really dangerous for Earthlings, Martians, and the Moon.
Who occupies Mars now? When you talk about a human civilization there, which we, I'm sure you'll agree, is underground, is that right?
There are various, we know, and I want to document it now. We know from at least three eyewitnesses, Michael Ralph, Andrew D. Bashago, who was a participant in Project Pegasus from 1968 to 72, a childhood participant. He was 6 to 7 years old at that time, and his father was a liaison with the CIA and DARPA in Project Pegasus. And at that time, in 1970, at a U.S. military base in New Jersey, Andy met three Martian astronauts who were on a defense technical liaison mission from Mars to meet with their counterparts in the U.S. defense establishment. And so he met them, and he describes Martian humans as looking very much like us, except they're kind of chunkier and a little bit uglier. All the men are sort of bald, and they look like one of the Three Stooges.
I was going to make a comment about Italians, but I decided not to offend anyone. Okay.
So he met those three astronauts then, so the underground civilization on Mars has had a working relationship with the U.S. defense establishment since at least 1970, if not before. And the underground base, the work on the underground base, has started in 1975. We have a witness, Michael Ralph, who teleported there and began his service from 1976 to 1996 because the application of the teleporting capability was applied in the case of Mars. Andy Bishago has described in detail the teleports to Mars. It takes about 20 minutes. And you go into a device. Actually, the Mars teleporter was located at a building that was 999 Sepulveda in Los Angeles. It was right next to LAX. It was a CIA building. You took the elevator up to the sixth floor. At the sixth floor, you went through reception. You stayed inside the elevator. It went up to the eighth floor, and that converted into the teleporter. So you were inside this elevator on the eighth floor that became the teleporter. You pushed a bunch of buttons, and a bunch of stuff happened. And 20 minutes later, the elevator opened, and you were in the Mars base.
That is so wild.
Now, to answer your question, and so we have Michael Ralph, Andy Bishago, William Brett Stillings, a colleague of Andy Bishago. Both of him went through a Mars training course in the 1980s, the summer of 1980, at the College of the Siskiyous in California, taught by Major Ed Dames, who was the instructor, and they were taught how to teleport there, how to comport themselves on the surface, because the surface of Mars is quite dangerous. It's filled with predators, so we have those witnesses, and we have Arthur Neumann. He's a former Department of Defense scientist. I interviewed him in Barcelona and at the Exopolitics Conference. And all of their stories are consistent. And Arthur Neumann did not know Andy Bishago, and Michael Ralph did not know. So these are independent eyewitnesses, all of whom are highly credible and all of whom come forth with the same story. Now, we then have a second database. What I do as an attorney, a former law professor, and a judge, I'm a judge on the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, and I use the methodology of the law of evidence, the legal law of evidence, which has been used in the courts for centuries as a methodology to sift facts, to sift evidence, both witness evidence and documentary evidence. And you can classify evidence. There are all sorts of rules. And courts have been able to sift evidence. And this is actually very much like the scientific method, which uses laboratory protocols and statistical methods. But here we're doing field research. So I believe that the law of evidence is probably the highest standard methodology that one can use. And with regard to documentary evidence, what we have is the NASA, the rover photos. These are photos taken by the NASA rovers, a whole new generation of photos. They're different from the satellite photos of the face on Mars. You know, these are taken in the November of 2007 forward, mm-hmm. and they're taken from the surface. They're not taken from, you know, 30,000 feet or the, what, you know, the geostationary orbit. What we have there, and people can go to projectmars.net and download there over 60 papers with analysis and with text and photos of different classes of humanoids, different classes of animals, statues, and structures on Mars. The statues and structures both relate to the ancient period that is pre-cataclysmic, where we have examples for instance, of a sarcophagus of the king, where there's an Egyptian pharaoh with the conical hat that the pharaohs and people like Nefertiti use. You've seen that with the bust of Nefertiti. I'm sure.
Right, but this is news to me that you've got photos of similar formations on Mars. I haven't seen these photos.
Yes. They're at projectmars.net, or you can go to exopolitics.com, and right there at the top you can download the classic paper, The Discovery of Life on Mars, and you can see it there. Now, what is very interesting is this. If those conical hats that people like Nefertiti and Akhenaten used, and we know that because we've gone into their tombs, if you take that hat off, what it covers is an elongated skull.
Yes.
And so these pharaohs had pinched rib cages and elongated skulls holding larger brains. In other words, they were a species of extraterrestrials, probably Anunnaki sourced. So it appears that prior to the solar system catastrophe, Earth and Mars, one hypothesis is that Earth and Mars were an interplanetary society ruled over by the Egyptian pharaohs, who had an interplanetary pyramid-based civilization and were Anunnaki extraterrestrials.
Well, but prior to Akhenaten, we, correct me if I'm mistaken, but we do not see such forms in the skull. This is one of the reasons why he has been described as the extraterrestrial pharaoh, because suddenly out of nowhere, he arrives with this form, or is there a piece I've missed?
Because we see these forms on Mars, and these are on sculptures that antedate the cataclysm.
Okay, but what my point is then, what you're saying is that this, let's call it the Anunnaki race, with such a skull formation would be existing on Mars, and then he, Akhenaten, would be the first, I would think, to appear in Egyptian civilization, or am I misreading what you're saying?
We don't know yet.
Okay.
What we know is we've discovered these artifacts.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing, Alfred.
Yeah. Yeah, and so people can go and see these. Now, there are various categories of humanoids. They're the humans that are like Homo sapiens, and they're the Homo sapiens that were separated from Earth with the 9500 BC cataclysm. And so there's more interbreeding because they're underground, so they've ended up looking like characters out of the Three Stooges, or maybe that's what, you know, that's what their astronauts look like. And this was back in the early 70s, and, you know, people who work for NASA and the military don't look like everybody else, so who knows? Andy Bishago, he's the president of the Mars Anomaly Research Society, which is at ProjectMars.net. We're furthering this research. I'm the chairman. In early January of 2009, shortly after publishing our findings, I published them first on exopolitics.com, the discovery of life on Mars, on December 12, 2008. He was called by Virginia Olds. She's from the Oldsmobile family. She's a lifelong CIA employee. And she called and said, "We want to verify your findings. They're about a million humans living underground on Mars, and there are other species of humanoids also."
Wow. So
all of those species, you know, have been verified. Now, it's going to take some time for that to be acknowledged. Why? Because another agency of government, NASA, has been putting in, and we detail this in the various papers, seven different types of masking. So it's very difficult to find and to really be able to see all of these artifacts and humanoids and animals in these photographs. What we've had to do at the Mars Anomaly Research Society, and we have a worldwide team of researchers, is we've gone into these composite photographs like PIA 10214 that was taken in November 2007 of the Columbia Basin in Mars. It's about the latitude of Columbus, Ohio. And then through various techniques, we go into the photograph and begin to isolate various things in there. But there are techniques that NASA uses to cover over a lot of the things so that...
Cool.
Sorry?
Cool. So you're kind of reverse engineering what the NASA has put over the images.
Yeah. But it's not to the... You know, but so that when we go and speak, maybe 50%, and now in some instances I spoke in Washington State, and 90% of the audience raised their hands, as to one of 99% of the audience raised their hands. It takes, Mars is not like Earth, and the animals are so strange, there are many hybrid animals, that it takes visual acuity to get beyond the screening by NASA and really see these. And there is a tremendous amount of NASA resources. For example, the public relations director of the Hubble telescope, who's a NASA employee, using taxpayer funds, wrote and published an article in Discover magazine attacking our findings.
Mm.
Now, that, I believe, is a federal crime.
Right.
Isn't it? Isn't, I mean,
you're the judge, but yeah, it sounds to me like
Look at the perversion. Look at the perversion. You have the public relations director of the Hubble telescope, a senior officer within NASA, using Discover magazine to disparage the findings of these, you know, of these, of life on Mars as part of the, of a government psyops. So I just want people to understand the forces that at this stage are arrayed. Now, that was a couple of years ago. I believe that now that the Gray Reptilian Alliance has been defeated, the Grays, large numbers of governments and government servants have been under Gray mind control and trauma-based mind control, and all that worldwide apparatus is going to start to fall. So now, I believe, is when we're going to be able to move forward and bring all of these discoveries to light. I see that. Is it 11? Are we toward the end of the program right now?
We have 8 minutes left.
Okay. I didn't even scratch the surface on Mars, and we haven't even talked about the dimensional shift and the ascension, which is the second part of what the Andromeda Council has talked about. So I'm not sure that I can really get into that.
No, I think we'll have to do that in another show. I think we should continue. So rather than leaping forward with that information, that you continue what you're telling us as best you can in these next few minutes.
Yeah,
with regard to, you know, I mean, I personally am very fascinated that you have access to these whistleblowers and get these firsthand accounts of their experiences. For example, you mentioned there are hybrid animals on the surface. My first question to that would be, are they being created in laboratories underground, and what would be the purpose for that?
Well,
do you have insights on that?
I think that this goes very deep. For example, we have photographs of what we call the Scorpion Man. This is a being with the head, with a human head and a scorpion body. And you will find such beings in Egyptian hieroglyphs. Mm-hmm. So that these are entities that go back eons, that go back to the Egyptian occupation of Mars.
Wow.
And you know, so it's not like, you know, there are beings there that have the upper torso of a human and the bottom torso of like a sludge, and they use them as sort of guard dogs for the settlers' houses there. And they bark. There are other sorts of beings that because they didn't have the KT extinction event, there are various categories of dinosaurs on the surface, some of which are predatory and quite dangerous. There's one that is like a raptor, you know, a bacilla raptor, and that predates on humans. And there is one.
May I just interject a question here? Are you also saying that there? You said a settler. Are you suggesting there are also humanoids living on the surface as well, or are they all underground because of this menace?
Sorry, I wasn't clear. That's an Earthling human. Right now, we don't have the exact numbers, but one estimate is about 500,000 humans, Earthling humans, are at the U.S. base on Mars.
Underground?
And not necessarily. Some above ground.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's also news to me.
Yeah. And it's quite a dangerous posting. Of the surface predation.
Do you think that they're terraforming the planet, or is that all a bunch of hype and they've really got an existing atmosphere?
No, Mars has an existing atmosphere. You don't need any breathing apparatus on Mars.
Really?
What it doesn't have is vegetation. And so it's a very kind of flat, it's a very horizontal, not a vertical biosphere, which means that the animals are all eating each other.
And what about those pictures we've seen of the trees?
Yeah, those are can be capable of various interpretations, and that would merit a whole other show.
Well, I've got the time, as they say, if you've got the beer.
Yeah, sure.
We'll definitely have you back on over and over again, and it's always just amazing for me to be able to speak to you and tap into this wealth of experience, knowledge, information, contacts, and vision that you have. So thank you, Alfred, for coming on.
So much.
What leave us with, because we've got just a few minutes left, what thought do you leave us with? I loved the fact that you started on a high note that this war is over. What does this mean? Here's how I'd like to leave. What do you believe this means for this evolutionary moment for us all, with the dread and the fear and the hype about ET revelation?
What it means is that we are now free as Homo sapiens to begin to reach our design blueprint as a 12-strand light being in the third dimension, as you so aptly have written.
Thank you. Well, that gives me chills from my wrist all the way down my back. That is that psychic recognition of some truth that really resonates in my soul, and I really thank you for that. It is really time for us to get on with the joy factor here on the planet and anticipate how it will be when we're finally released from all these holographic imprints, whatever you want to call them, and take our rightful place as star beings on the planet Earth. So thank you, Alfred. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Come back soon.
Yes.
You've been listening to Alfred Weber. Whoosh! Really a mind-blowing show. His website is xopolitics.com. Alfred, what is your book, your new book coming out?
Yes, it'll be coming out early next year, and it's Dimensions, the Ecology of the Multiverse.
That sounds wonderful. I'm going to have you on before it comes out, but that I certainly would love to explore that with you as well. And don't forget to listen to Alfred's, I don't know where to start, his radio show, his website, his intriguing articles. He is a wealth of information, folks, so tune in and keep abreast of everything that is beyond the reality as we know it in this limitation scope, and find out what's happening with Alfred and the wonderful people that he connects with. I have had Andrew Bajago on the show. I'd love to have it back. Please send him my regards.
Certainly.
Alrighty, folks, that's it. It's Patricia Corey signing out from the Azores Islands, which, by the way, I do believe is Atlantis. And that's another whole conversation for another day. So thank you for being with me. My love around you. This is Patricia Corey. Na-na-na-na, signing out. Thank you. Bye-bye. See you in 2 weeks. Arrivederci.